You'll grab a Bible and turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to be there in our lesson this morning. Ecclesiastes. Thank you for being here with us this morning. If you are joining us via Zoom virtually, we thank you for being with us as well. Had some technical difficulties getting that started this morning, but we're just thankful we are able to be together and join our hearts with one another. If you have not read through the book of Ecclesiastes just all the way through at any point in time, I would encourage you to do that. Maybe take some time today or sometime this week just to set 15, 20 minutes aside and just read it from beginning to end and just kind of soak in the message of Solomon. Whenever you do that, Ecclesiastes might seem like something of a pessimistic or cynical or maybe depressing book. And from one angle, it certainly is. But if you read it from the angle that the author intended, then it's not a depressing book. Rather, I think it's a book of great comfort. It's a book that, yes, is dark in places as it describes the broken realities of this world, the suffering and the injustice that we experience and we see even today. But that's all because of the world as it was not created in the beginning. Remember this phrase that Solomon uses, under the sun, doesn't refer to life in the very beginning, in the garden, but it refers to life as it began in Genesis chapter 3, when sin entered into the world. The curse entered the world. The world was broken. It was subject to futility, pain, and suffering, and conflict entered. And so this is the world that Solomon is looking at, and it's the world that we see today. Paul Earnhardt well described the purpose of this book, the message of the book, in this statement. The whole world cannot fill the emptiness of a single person's soul. The whole world cannot fill the emptiness that a single soul feels, or the emptiness that we feel in our hearts. And so that's what we talked about last week. Solomon engaged in this grand experiment to try to figure out what's the purpose of life. So he tried money, he tried drugs, he tried all these kind of things that we fill our time and our focus and our attention on. We say, if I just had that, then I'd be happy. Solomon had it all, and he ended up saying, I hated life because I was left feeling empty. So life is filled with suffering. But what I want to share with you today is the other side of the coin of Ecclesiastes. Yes, it is filled with suffering, and it's filled with emptiness without God. But life is still a gift from God. So I want us to think about this morning what Solomon has to say to us about rejoicing in life. How can we use the life that God has given to us despite the difficult things we experience? How can we use them and take great joy in them? Because Ecclesiastes has a lot to say about finding joy and finding satisfaction, true satisfaction in life. Now, it is true that pleasures and possessions are not the ultimate purpose of life. But now God has given us pleasures and possessions. And God intends, fully intends, for us to enjoy those right now. So how can we use these as joys of life? How can we enjoy life under the sun as God intended it, despite all being vanity, and without making pleasures and possessions the ultimate meaning of life? Just want to read for you five passages from Ecclesiastes that talk about rejoicing. First is Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 24. He says, there is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and to tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen that is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? In chapter 3, verse 12, I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is the gift of God. In chapter 5, verse 18, here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself and all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, He has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and to rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. For he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. We'll come back to verse 20 in just a little bit later on in our lesson to see what it says to us. In chapter 9, verse 7, Solomon says, "Go then, eat your bread in happiness, and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. Let your clothes be white all the time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which he has given you under the sun. For this is your reward in life and in your toil in which you have labored under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you are going." And then finally in chapter 11, he writes this to young people in particular. Verse 7, Ecclesiastes 11, 7. "The light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything that is to come will be futility. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart, and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting." So Solomon tells us, despite all of the injustices and the bad things that we see in the world around us, he says for us to rejoice and to live. Enjoy the life that God has given to you. God has given us many things to enjoy. Here are some of the ones that we just read about. Food and drink. He tells us to eat and drink and enjoy it. He tells us to work with our hands and to find joy in our accomplishments. Find joy in your occupation, in the work that you do. Find joy in your riches, the fruit of your labors, in your possessions, he says. And then in your relationships. He tells the young man to rejoice in the wife of your youth, to enjoy the relationships that you have in your life. And so he is telling us to enjoy the life God has given to us. Now, in the context of Ecclesiastes, we need to offer a few clarifying thoughts about what this does not mean. First of all, these texts do not mean that we just ignore suffering and we bury our heads in the sand and we sugarcoat all the evil that we see in the world. Sometimes Christians tend to do that. We tend to just kind of brush evil to the side, pretend it doesn't exist, or if someone that is close to us is suffering, we just kind of sugarcoat it. But don't do that. Think about the book of Job. His friends did not deal with his suffering in the righteous way, and yet Job suffered immensely. So these texts do not tell us just to go on with life and pretend that life is just dandy and good. You know, just don't worry and be happy. That's not what he's telling us to do. This is naive, and it misses the entire point of the book. We need to acknowledge the evils in the world because those drive us to God. Secondly, these verses do not mean just do whatever you want to do. Just a license to make any choice you want. Remember what he says in 11:9? "Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all of these things." Yes, so go and follow your dreams, but remember that you're going to have to be accountable to God for that. Fear God, he says. And then finally, he's not telling us, well, this is all there is, that right now is all you're ever going to have, so just live it up, however you want to do. When he says rejoice and enjoy life, he's not saying that in the same way that Paul would say it in 1 Corinthians 15 when he writes, "If there is no resurrection, let us eat, drink, for tomorrow we die." That's not Solomon's perspective at all. Solomon knows that there is a judgment to come, that there is an afterlife. And so we will be accountable. And he says that there is eternity in our hearts. This life is not all there is. And so this life is really about preparing for eternity. But at the same time, while we are in this life, Solomon tells us you can find joy because life is a gift from God. So for the rest of our time, I want to share with you, what this does mean is that we need to enjoy life as God's temporary, yes, but also precious gift. So what I want to do for the rest of our time is share with you four keys that Solomon gives us to finding true happiness in life. Remember, Solomon didn't find true happiness by filling his life with everything but God. He felt empty at the end of that. But he says that you can indeed find true happiness in the here and the now with God and yet still finding joy in the pleasures that God has given to you. Number one is to acknowledge God as the gracious giver of your life and everything that you enjoy in life. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 24. He says, "There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God." What he says there is that life is a gift from God's hand. Yes, the curse that we experience because of sin is also from God. Romans chapter 8, God has subjected this world to futility. But the gifts that God gives us now, even in this broken world, they are from God's hand as well. Notice verse 25. Who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? At least that's what the New American Standard says. There is a translation issue here, depending on how various translations render this. If you're reading the New King James, it says something to the effect of, who can have more joy beyond me, or more than me? I think it's better translated, who can have enjoyment without God? He's not emphasizing Solomon's authority on this issue. He's emphasizing in the context that God is the source of joy in all of life. That we cannot really have true joy, if you hear what he's saying, without God. It doesn't mean that if you don't believe in God, you can't find joy. Godless people, people who don't believe in God, can have a lot of fun in life. That's not what he's saying, that they can't have any fun, but they can't have the true enjoyment that God intends. And even beyond that, he's saying to us that people who don't even believe in God, how do they have life? How do they experience life apart from God? God is the one who has given them life to begin with. Whether we realize it or not, whether we acknowledge God or not, our lives are from God. They're from his hand. And so anything that we enjoy, whether it be a relationship, whether it be a thing we do for recreation, whether it be food and drink, whatever it is, all of it comes from God's hand. Remember that Jesus says that God shines the sun on the good and the evil, the rain on the unjust and the just. God's blessings come to all people. And so the point of this is if we're going to have the true joy that God intends for us to have, we need to, first of all, acknowledge him as the giver. We must honor and thank God. Remember in Jesus' ministry, he told a story in Luke chapter 12 of a rich farmer who had been immensely blessed in his harvest. Luke chapter 12, verse 16 says, "The land of a rich man was very productive, and he began to reason to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared?'" Now, the rich farmer, remember, God blessed him. If there's any blessing in life, it comes from God. And the farmer was richly blessed by God. But where did he go wrong here? Well, there's several ways that he went wrong. He speaks of my riches and my goods and let me, you know, enjoy my life. But really, the big thing here is that he did not turn and thank God. He didn't pray to God and thank him for his blessings. He was not rich toward God, Jesus says. And so acknowledging God as the gracious giver of life is the first step to finding true happiness in the gifts that God has given to us. Doing that keeps us from entitlement and greed and covetousness because we realize it all comes from God. I've often wondered, how does an atheist think, have thankfulness? Or, you know, who does an atheist thank for the blessings in his life? If we're just a bunch of atoms that are bumping together with no real purpose, then when you get this feeling of gratitude in your heart, who do you turn to? Where do you channel that thankfulness? The second step we need to take is a little bit paradoxical. If we're going to have true happiness and joy in life, Solomon tells us, we're going to have to embrace our mortality. In other words, we're going to have to acknowledge, I'm going to die one day. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 2. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 2. It is better to go to a house of mourning than to a house of feasting, because that is the end of every man, and the living takes it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for when a face is sad, a heart may be happy. The mind of the wise is in the house of mourning, while the mind of fools is in the house of pleasure. Now think about those verses and just contemplate them for a few minutes. Why is he telling us that it's better to go to a funeral than to a party? I mean, what's the point here? Number one, he says in verse 2, because that's the end of every man. Because it's at the funeral that we stare face to face with the reality, the cold reality, that that's going to be me one day. I'm going to be put in a box, my body is, and people are going to be attending my funeral. What are they going to be saying? And where am I going to be after that point? It's there that we acknowledge the reality that we are going to die. He also says in verse 3, sorrow is better than laughter, because when a face is sad, a heart may be happy. I think he's saying here that, you know, superficial happiness can mask the fear of death. People seem like they're rejoicing and partying in life, but really deep down, they know that there's something more. And many times they're vexed and they're afraid and despairing in life because they know that they're going to die. But when we contemplate and we deal with the reality that we're going to die, then that gives us perspective. And when you live with perspective, then you're able to live with contentment. You're able to live with peace. And I believe you're able to live with joy. Solomon tells us that we need to embrace the fact that we're going to die one day, acknowledge that, and deal with that, and more than that, make preparations. Because it's only then that we can live now in light of eternity. Death casts its shadow over all of life. It is death that people fear more than anything else. It is death that brings sorrow to our lives when the death of a loved one or hits a tragic thing hits our community or our country or our world. It brings sorrow to our hearts because death casts its shadow over all of life. And as I said, this is a paradox. Only by confronting what we most dread and preparing to meet our Maker can we really enjoy the life. Are you at peace with the fact that one day you're going to die? Are you at peace with that fact? Have you made preparations for that? Only then are we free from the preoccupation of fear. I told you that I'd come back to chapter 5 in verse 20. And I want to do that now. Let's go back to chapter 5 of Ecclesiastes, verse 20. In verse 18, he tells us to eat, drink, and to enjoy yourself in all one's labor which he toils under the sun during the few years. So while we enjoy life with the perspective that my years are few. But look at verse 20. For he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. I don't think that Solomon is saying that we just become distracted by joy, that we forget that our life is short and our years are few. I think he's saying that whenever we realize and we acknowledge that we're going to die and we prepare for that, we can set that aside and we can live now because we know that in eternity we will be okay. Death is a cause of vexation to Solomon. And so he tells you, don't be vexed, don't be afraid of death. Instead, prepare for meeting your Maker. Embrace your mortality, and then you can find joy. Number three, learn contentment. Learn to be content with what you have. For this point, I want to read chapter 5, beginning in verse 10, and all the way down to verse 17. He's talking in this context about covetousness. And listen to what he says. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. There is a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun, riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. When those riches were lost through a bad investment and he had fathered a son, then there was nothing to support him. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so he will return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Exactly as a man is born, thus he will die. So what is the advantage to him who toils for the wind? Throughout his life, he also eats in darkness with great vexation, sickness, and anger. You hear the emptiness of trying to fill your life and fill your heart with money and possessions and those sorts of things. Solomon tells us that if you love money, you're never going to be satisfied with money. J.D. Rockefeller, who was immensely rich in his time back in the early days of American history, was asked one time, how much money are you going to have in order for you to be satisfied? And he said, just a little more. Just a little more. He says in verse 11, when good things increase, those who consume them increase. You ever thought about the fact that the more money you have, the more money you spend? The more, and this is true when you win the lottery, you know what happens when you win the lottery? People come out of the woodwork, your you know, second cousin thrice removed, and they start coming to you because they want a little piece of that. The more we have in life, the more it consumes us with anxiety. Solomon says the full stomach of the rich man does not let him sleep. He's worried about, you know, how am I going to use my possessions? How am I going to protect them and maintain them and pass them on to my children? And ultimately, money cannot guarantee security either in this life or in the next life. What's the flip side of that? What's the answer to covetousness? And the life that you have of anxiety when you fill your life with greed and the love of money, the answer is contentment. That's why he says in verse 18, here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, to enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. This is his reward. To realize I've got, you know, some possessions to enjoy, but they're not the meaning of life. They're a gift from God. I'm a steward and I need to enjoy them. Contentment. When you are content, you're at peace with the reality that your possessions are not going to last forever. That life is just temporary. And when you're content, it empowers you to really enjoy life. It empowers you to enjoy the time you spend with your family, to enjoy whatever you do with your possessions. And remember what Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 6, that godliness is a means of gain when it's accompanied with great contentment. No, we were born absolutely naked, nothing to our name in this world, and we're going to go out of the world in the same way. Learn contentment to find joy and true happiness in life. Here's a story that's told of a hard-driving and well-earned businessman who had a professional fisherman. He saw him out on a pier one day teaching his son how to fish. And he asked him, why aren't you out there fishing right now? Why aren't you out there catching more fish? And he said, well, what would I do with the fish? And he said, well, you could sell them and buy a bigger boat. Well, what would I do with the bigger boat? The fisherman asked. And he said, well, you could go out and you could catch more fish and you could really enjoy life. And the fisherman said, well, what do you think I'm doing right now? Learn contentment. And then finally, Solomon tells us to find true happiness, we need to learn to trust God's unseen hand. Trust what God is doing in life. Look at chapter 3 and verse 11 beginning. He has made everything appropriate in its time. We sing a song related to that. He has also set eternity in their heart so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. I know that there is nothing better for one to do than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is the gift of God. In verse 14, I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it. There is nothing to take from it. For God has so worked that men should fear him. The point here is that God is working through the evils in the world, through the trials, through the difficulties. God is working all of that to point us to him so that we would fear him. You know, how can Solomon say rejoice when he describes the world as being so broken? Because three things, really quickly. Because he trusts God and his grace to give life. He realizes that I'm alive right now and this is a gift from God's hand. Secondly, he trusts God's justice to make the evils of the world, the wrongs and the errors of the world, right one day. And then thirdly, he trusts God's providence to do whatever he wills to do, to work for the redemption of those who fear him. One passage in Ecclesiastes that really stands out to me is Ecclesiastes chapter 8, in verse 12. It says, although, this is chapter 8, verse 12, Although a sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, still I know that it will be well for those who fear God, who fear him openly. But it will not be well for the evil man, and he will not lengthen his days like a shadow because he does not fear God. Why does Solomon say that? I know that despite all of the things that even righteous people are going to suffer in this life, that in the end, it's going to be well for those that fear God. Why? Because he knows his Creator. Remember, he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth and put your faith and your trust in him. So this morning, let me just close by asking you, do you have the peace and the joy that God wants you to have in life? Do you know what that feels like? Yes. If you can say yes, then praise him. Give thanks to him. And I encourage you to just feed that and enjoy life, as Solomon has said, with the perspective that this life, yes, is temporary. But if you answer that question, no, when you look deep in your heart and you say, no, I don't really have the joy that God wants me to have, why not? What's preventing you? You have life, and that's the first step to enjoying life, right? Is it because you're not acknowledging God, that he is the one who has given you life? Is it because you're afraid of death? Maybe you're afraid of what's on the other side. You know that there's something that you need to take care of in your life. Is it because you're discontent? You're not enjoying the gifts that God has given you now. Or is it because you're just afraid of the unknown? You need something to trust in. You don't know what that is. The answer is God. If we can help you in any way, let's make that known as we stand.